deity, those who are Israel, who are men, ruling with God, presumably the demiurge Saturn Jehovah, who these ideologues claim is named Yahweh, are the white race, properly, according to their theology, called Adamic, which term is allegedly Paleo-Hebrew, a language allegedly spoken by whites around the time of Christ and means to be of ruddy complexion or to show blood in the face, to be capable of blushing, the exclusive property of the white race. Within this version of identity, the white Adamic race are the children of God and have an exclusive covenant with this deity Yahweh for global dominion, also called the Dominion Mandate. They claimed that there were other so-called men who preceded Adam, and that these are the non-white races who aren't a result of mixture with the Adamites or with the fallen angels, who are the progenitors of the Jews with Eve, the white female who then bore Cain, and whose descendants became the Jews, ancestors of the scripturally saw, Canaanites, etc., and Arabs. The white race they claim migrated from the Tarim Basin in Central Asia to all of what are known white nth contemporary diaspora of the Israelites, which constitutes retroactive proof of their lineage as the 12 tribes of Israel. Of course, as some of the identity proponents such as James Wickstrom claim, the 12 tribes also represent the 12 signs of the zodiac, which were ostensibly named after them. The alleged son of Yahweh is the Christ, who is somehow an absolutely perfect, infinite being who concentrates himself into finite form, which is only possible to make sense of in some quantum metaphysical mental gymnastics, viz. Being fractally represented or manifested in this finite animate form. The only other way this could make any sense, of course, is allegorically as an archetype of man perfected, or Christ consciousness, or some such state of heightened spiritual elevation. This the author, in his finite and low state of mind, is unable to articulate in any more contained practical terms, on which state of being almost certainly is ineffable, and can only be embodied, if ever attainable, and would probably be called Luciferian, more than Christian, the latter entailing a presumed obsequious subordination to external authority and not the God within. Thus the recipe of a slave system is born with the obligation to venerate and bow to external authority being enforced through the threat of hellfire or the promise of everlasting life in a blessed world of the beyond and or a resurrection upon the earth after 1,000 years of rest to then rule over a renewed earth. The theology, as in the case of all Abrahamic creeds mainstream and otherwise, becomes cloudy on this point, and all of the theological tangle becomes a Gordian knot that one must pick at in hopes of following the thread to the promised land of milk and honey, or to have recourse to a blind faith in he knows not what. Given, of course, that what is called God by most Abrahamism is only defined in abstracto as, for example, that in which nothing greater can exist, or that infinite being perfect in itself, incorruptible, omniscient, omnipresent, removed from spatio-temporal context, etc. Thus one has recourse to a mere abstraction, to contemplate as it were in a void and through a glass darkly from his own narrow corner. And yet could it be otherwise? This is the ultimate conclusion of such ontological, metaphysical speculation, and the ultimate praxis of Abrahamism divorced of its mundane praxis of handing out freebies and loving thy neighbor. As Bertrand Comperet wrote in his article Who is Thy Neighbor? In Christian identity only the white race counts as human, all else being beasts of the field. Serpent seed Jews or bastards, mongrels, bastards, mamzers in Paleo-Hebrew, hence only fellow whites regardless of ideology or physical location would qualify as neighbors. Thus there is a prohibition on any altruism towards non-white, a behavior rightly called pathological by Kevin MacDonald, but not a symptom of the white mind as this crypto-Jew academic contends, but rather a mind virus installed by Jews to facilitate what is interpreted to be Balaam's doctrine in Christian identity, namely a protocol of mixture of whites with non-whites for the purpose of exterminating whites as a racial group and thereby taking the world for themselves, and what is to be interpreted as Satan, who the Jews are alleged to stem from as their progenitor. Of course, for those unaware of esotericism and so-called pagan antecedents, it is easy to fall for the trap set by the Jew in their probable self-portrayal as the synagogue of Satan as a means of binding people to the church and the thought form of Christ or Yahweh, thereby empowering the Jews who draw energy from this thought form which they themselves have created in the first place for the means of not only mind controlling their slaves, but of vampirizing their energy. However, such works as Maurice Pinet's The Plot Against the Church and Denis Faye's The Kingship of Christ and Organized Naturalism take the opposite position, that Jews have been and always will be pantheists and opponents of Christianity. Thus it seems probable that Christian identity is indeed a soap that serves Jews if this perspective is taken, and given that the people most likely to gravitate towards it are white racialists and not Judeo-Christians, it functions most likely in simply converting an opponent of Jew to becoming a new human battery they can drain to empower themselves, like in the movie The Matrix, through transmitting their thought energy to the fictional Christ egregor and ultimately to Jew. However, if it has any saving grace, it transmits hate vibrations to the Jew and usurps their alleged right to rule the world, possibly drawing energy away from them, disempowering them, but this seems dubious and grasping at straws. Perhaps this was planned by the Jews from the beginning in their attempts to subvert and destroy the white race. According to such racialist luminaries as David Lane and William L. Pierce, identity was created to get people out of Jew worship and towards a more healthy-minded racialism that facilitates white survival. The main character in the novel Hunter encounters a man playing the role of a preacher, and whose role is to manipulate the minds of the masses to shift their consciousness towards the Jew as the synagogue of Satan, through gradually interspersing information about the Jew in his sermons and via an epiphany from God, becomes enlightened as to the evil of the Jew and uses his influence he has built up to turn former Jew worshippers against their one-time masters. This seems like predictive programming and a fair portrayal of what Christian identity as a pro-white soap constitutes or could be argued to constitute. However, given that Pierce had a shady past where he was not, as were other white nationalists, detained in Germany, and had allowed a copy of his organization, the National Alliance's membership list, to slip into the hands of the FBI and ultimately the terrorist organization, the ADL, suggests that both he and his organization are Ethiopia's Christianity, and perhaps implicitly Christian identity also were vilified in his opposing ideologies document. This may, though it is debatable, suggest that he and his organization may be in bed with the Jews. The cosmotheist religion is denied by Christian identity, which attempts to disprove evolutionism. To the contrary, David Mitt of the Order of Nine Angles attempted to prove this in the Initiatic document NAS. Thus, Christian identity is an apparently pro-white soap, though it functions perhaps to a greater degree in an anti-white modality, thereby serving the Jew in his gambit for total power. The alleged prophecies of the Bible or scriptures are quite convincingly proven to have been largely a contrivance based upon the fall of Atlantis in the Book of Hammonwell and Atlantis, Ada and Bible, which illustrates in countless examples and comparative references from the Ada and other more ancient texts that the prophecies or revelation are merely allegorical and metaphorical language descriptive of these past events and thus don't relate to the future. Thus, at best, Christian identity can't be said to be real in an objective sense, and is at best somewhat pragmatically useful to the white race as a soap to get Christians to stop worshipping Jews and mud people, but is most likely an overall negative influence co-opting and corrupting the white nationalist movement, as other figures such as perhaps Bishop Richard Williamson of the SSPX and Michael Jones, who are trying to get their foot in the door, as a typically sneaking one nap Jew to corrupt and destroy what they justifiably see as opposition to their J.O.G. tyranny, namely racial nationalism. That E. Michael Jones has explicitly stated that Europeans were merely cave-dwelling savages drinking baby blood out of goat skulls prior to Christianity, merely demonstrated his anti-white bias, as no one but a bigoted Christian or anti-white could be so ignorant as to believe that the people who built Samaria, Rome, and Greece were ever so low in their behavior. Bishop Richard Williamson has also explicitly stated that they, the Roman Catholic Church, would continue to facilitate the invasion of non-whites into Europe until the whites converted, thereby facilitating the genocide of his own people and demonstrating he is a race traitor. Below is a cast of caricatures, characters who represent the limelights of the movement and give one a sound understanding of Christian identity in both its dual and single seed line forms. Cast of caricatures characters. Dew Tucker claims biblical ancient aliens are the Elohim who created the white race. Refutes ideas of hell, heaven and other obvious lies. Possibly a Freemason and pagan, Wesley Swift, physiognomy suggests semi-Jewish features, makes references to the Zohar as an originally white book which is almost certainly Jewish in origin, Refrenkes single quote sixth sub-race of the fifth root race as being a composite of all whites coming together in Urza. Swift also speaks of aliens as the progenitors of whites and Michael the Archangel as their leader, speaks of Negroes as being brought to Earth from Venus by intergalactic Jewish slave traders James Wickstrom, possibly assassinated by the Cabal. He discusses throughout his presentation, which originate around the mid-80s, many provable and legitimate aspects of paleo archaeology and other textual, numerological evidence the prehistory of whites around the world, and makes in many cases a convincing argument for Christian identity through making these retrospective claims of the past historical record, proving the identity thesis, who's who and who's Jew in his words. He comically uses garbled words, mispronouncing others, and makes laughable claims such as, for example, the caduceus of the medical establishment is a symbol of the serpent Satan. Wickstrom also references aliens as the progenitors of the white race. F.W. Sinisa, South African pastor whose presentation sermons are mainly in Afrikaans. He discusses in one of his works Flying Saucers, the alleged textual evidence for flying saucer origins of the white race, and also associates Jews with the synagogue of Satan. William Fink, this figure is one of the main movement lights. He is heavy-handed on the Jews and claims they are destined to be destroyed, and so too most of the non-whites who are not of God, being a result of bastardization. His scholarship is quite detailed and convincing to those who know little of the Bible and little of esotericism. Fink has been proven to be of Jewish ancestry via his New Jersey ancestors. He has a large archive called the Mein Kampf Project, which discusses the Third Reich in copious detail, and so far as the author can recall claimed that the reason Hitler didn't win the war is because he wasn't Christian, the same claim made by Richard Kelly Hoskins, author of the Phineas Priesthood. The fact that Hitler was an occultist and opposed to Christ insanity can be seen in many quotations from the Zweitzbach. From Dietrich Eckart's Bolshevism, From Moses to Lenin, and the compilation from called The Third Reich and Christianity, comprised of direct quotations from the Third Reich leadership. Eli James, outed Jew infiltrator and possible Chicago rabbi, he is attempting to claim that there is a place for non-whites in the world, and that single seed line is the correct interpretation of the scriptures. This theology allows Jews to get a foothold somehow, and he has been largely outed by the dual seed line sect, thus lending some legitimacy to the sincerity of belief of people in Christian identity. Unless he is playing the role of bad cop or red herring to create the appearance of legitimacy. Jeremy Visser, a half-breed mongrel, part Cherokee Indian, he works with Eli pushing single seed line visually an obvious hybrid. Martin Lindstedt, half-breed crypto Jew who runs a website that is a standing joke in the movement, a hillbilly who wears a possum hat apparently unironically, though this may be a soap itself, mocking the redneck Goyim. William P. Gale, an ostensive colonel in the U.S. Army circa Wesley Swift's time until around the 90s, Gale propounded in his Faith of Our Fathers the alien origins theory. Claimed by some to be Ashkenazi Richard Butler, Aryan Nation's founder who took over from Swift. He can be proven to be a half-breed, and his physiognomy proves it. The author urges the earnest inquirer and seeker of truth to leave no stone unturned in his search. There are countless disinformation agents and the blind alleys they create to lead one away from truth is a veritable minefield that requires one to tread lightly and yet tread humorously, as his very existence depends upon him making progress along this path. The truth, the Jew is the enemy of the white race. The white race faces extinction at its hands. Non-whites are at best a tool, but in most all cases a natural enemy. As Ben Klassen said in The White Man's Bible, phase out all dealings with muds and Jews. Organicism, the philosophy of Oswald Spengler and Francis Parker Yockey, has been called organicism by some, a philosophy related to what they called cultures, which these authors posit as some sort of spiritual force or organism that has a material component in the form of human populations and the cultures which they create, which are epiphenomena of that population and presumably are an as it were emanation of the culture soul or cultural organism from which they derive, as above so below. Thus what are conventionally called cultures are incarnations of the cultural soul or organism, its mundane footprints having an idiosyncratic size and shape specific to itself. Organicism is a nebulous creed as, especially in the case of Francis Parker Yockey, it speaks of the cultural organism as not racial or a race but existing over and above the particular racial demographics, such that the demographic can be molded and modified according to the qualities of this culture, which has a formative and causal influence on their being. This appears to be a legitimate enough conception should we conceive that such an organism exists, which is itself a fair presumption. However, whether this organism is not necessarily bound up with certain racial groups as either an epiphenomenon of their racial soul having a causal influence in maintaining their soul, or whether it is a given structure. Thus what is cause and what is effect, and what precedes and originates, and what proceeds and is originated is a question. Perhaps either of the organicist authors speak of this in detail, but the writer can't recall any specific passage wherein this was spoken of. Thus upon reading such as Spengler and Yockey, one is left with a tenuous connection between a nebulous culture or culture soul and the actual, biological race which exists and can be perceived in five-sense reality to concretely exist is neglected. This has the effect of accommodating doubt in the reader as to whether spirit and matter are strictly conjoined, and accommodates the presence of these distinct biological physical groups within the same territory as the emphasis of the organicists is the presentation of Western culture, which term Western is referred to explicitly in Spengler's title of his work The Decline of the West. In Yockey's work Imperium, also the emphasis is placed on salvaging Western civilization, which could mean any number of things, and as Yockey spoke favorably of the Catholic Church in The Enemy of Europe, at a certain point he may have attempted to draw parallels between Catholicism and Western civilization, such that it is the universal Catholic Church that is being sought to be saved, not the white race specifically. Spengler, however, contends, regarding Christianity, that it is the grandmother of Bolshevism and exalts Prussianism. Thus he would not speak favorably of Christianity, nor weld it together with the West, but in his magnum opus speaks of the West in terms suggestive of his willingness to see it saved from a possibly inevitable doom. Thus can be seen that the culture is not strictly bound to race so far as the writer can recall, that the West is spoken of in decline, and that whether it can be salvaged or not is a question. Thus the reader of these works is left in some state of confusion as to what is being spoken of as the culture and the West are nebulous and ill-defined terms which admit of all manner of associations, most of which are presumably false. That Spengler was allegedly 1/8 Jewish suggests that, as he was the founder of organicism, the purpose of this philosophy was to confuse the racial issue under the guise of a nebulous cultural auspice which is suggested to be the major ultima causa of that over which it superintends. Thus biological race is shunted to the side and supplanted with a culture, organic life that can be observed on the earth being supplanted with the life of the unidentifiable and at best infable by the mundane artifacts of human culture. Cultural organicism as the be-all and end-all, possibly accommodating non-white races in white society and even an intermixture thereof. The way in which these ideas are presented, clothed in a tone of doom, gloom and desperate necessity of struggle, makes discerning any forward path difficult to properly understand and leaves the reader with a feeling of hopelessness and even apathy over the fate of the West, Western culture. Perhaps both Spengler and Yockey were operatives of the cabal and were merely conscripted to play the role they play, the former as a respectable bourgeois civil servant putting forth a philosophy of aggression so that the Germans could be clothed in the raiment of militarism and thus blamed for the orchestrated world war that the Jewish elite and their Masonic affiliates contrived to establish the State of Israel, the League of Nations and their world government, and this by creation in chaos and the breakup of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Thus Germans become the scapegoat again and are blamed for the Juice Gambit for power. Perhaps this was the motive of putting Spengler in his position and publishing his works, making them highly popular in the Germany of the time. As regards Yockey, he appears on the scene as an Irish-American, presumably at one time a Catholic, and apparently had a change of heart or epiphany regarding the injustice of the Jewish-orchestrated World War II, and on that basis became an opponent of that which he rightly referred to as the enemy of Europe, that is, the Jewish shadow government in both its communist Soviet form and its Zionist capitalist form. This is what gave rise to the notion of the third position, that which is neither communist nor capitalist but is attached the somewhat nebulous label fascist, which simply means a government based upon order in its Italian fascist sense, a term that, like culture and Western, could have assimilated within it any and everything from a multiracial sewer to a Christian hegemony ruled by Jews. Presumably the latter is an outlier, and the traditional definition of Mussolini and Gentile applies in Yockey's understanding, namely an organic state, a state that is shaped and molded by a common culture or culture organism, and that the culture organism has become developed. The writer does not adequately comprehend either Yockey or Spengler's position by the population's existence in a given place over time, like a foot fitting into a shoe. The shoe becomes molded by the foot and perhaps molds the foot for better or worse. Thus the end conclusion regarding organicism that the writer can make is that as a general description of the modality of a racial soul, it would be a valid conception, the racial soul qua culture having a formative influence on the population, serving to maintain a certain state of being or formation that can be considered the race of the population existing in an organic state. However, it is uncertain whether Yockey or Spengler intended this to be their conception at all, and thus the reader of their works is left with more questions than answers. The fact that Yockey reached out to non-whites such as Arabs, etc. for assistance in dismantling the American Empire suggests that he might have had at least an effective strategy in combating the inimitable. It creates associations that the Jewish police state want, namely to associate whites with terrorism, and further it creates, should any such alliances ever be formed, a high probability of having the relationship blow up in one's face. Thus one must conclude that organicism is a noli me tangere and should be read simply to extract useful concepts that can be perhaps better oriented towards racial preservation. The decline of the West and the manifest destiny of the white race are confused in the works of Spengler and Yockey the organicists, and thus what the destiny of the West will be and whether this is equivalent to the destiny of the white race or contains it in a positive and uplifting manner or a negative and destructive one is an uncertainty. The tone of both, especially that of Spengler, suggests if not an inevitable decline then a necessary upward heroic striving for the salvation of the white race, and in the case of Yockey it is more of a battle cry than anything strategic or tactically specific. The preservation or rectification of Western civilization, the culture of the West, is thus portrayed as a dying cancer patient, and whether this patient's condition is terminal or no is not stated in either work to be a certainty, but rather an uncertainty, though in both the uncertainty of its recovery seems to preponderate, especially in the case of the Mischling Spengler, who may have been fanning the flames of war deliberately. Thus is put forth and very discreetly a Near Eastern fatalism that accompanies Spengler's works and the conception of culture cycles as if they were paralleled the physical body subject to generation and corruption. Perhaps this may be the case, but the influence and effect of the work leads more to an apathetic pessimism in the reader than any inspiration to combat the enemy and attain a victory. Perhaps this was the intention of the work, namely to demoralize the racialist white reader and lead him to the precipice of despair over the potentially near inevitable fate of his culture, that is, of his race and all of that which supports his being and is a creation thereof. Perhaps this is just the writer's misunderstanding of the works of the organizists. In either case, both Spengler and Yockey are used by contemporary operatives of the cabal to put forth their nebulous third position, to detract from the racialist standpoint and its clear and distinct blood, soul and soil emphasis and the necessity for action against the enemy. The creation of bad alliances with such as non-white and especially Muslims and with Russia, the Eurasian Empire, with an excessively harsh critique of Americanism without an adequate appreciation of its saving graces and the replication of the anti-Nordicist agenda which is diametrically opposed to the position of the National Socialists and of Julius Evola's conceptions of race as outlined in Synthesis of Racial Doctrine. Thus the contemporary outright Nazi bulldogenist figures who are all working against the intelligent white elites and even average intelligent pro-whites who value their European heritage and the productive and creative history of whites, are merely serving the Jews wittingly or knowingly, sabotaging the only hope whites have for survival, namely the white intelligentsia who dwell in the West, without whom all civilization crumbles to dust in the iron fist of global Jewish despotism, whether it flies its black and red flag under the name of third position, fascism in its inauthentic, nebulous form, or national Bolshevism or variations on the theme. Whether this is an appropriate application of organicism or a construal is a question the writer cannot solve. Emanationism, being, the on, and the Jew, the whole of the history of thought, of philosophy and of religion orients around a divine principle or one being that is purported to be God. The absolute, the supreme being, that than which nothing greater can exist, the omniscient, the omnipresent, it. Al, what else could this be but the galactic center? This is a consistent idea throughout the history of conceptualizing reality and thus must be reckoned with or given credence as a potential reality. In the tradition of the Aryan in its various forms globally, from the earliest kingdom of Egypt with its Amun and Sumeria with its Enlil, through the Brahma of India and the great ultimate of Taoism, all ancient white societies have subscribed to a henotheistic conception of reality, of being, in which the divine principle exists as the source of all being, if not identical with the sum total of all phenomena within the phenomenal world. The various god forms, allegorical representations of natural forces correlated with planetary deities in most cases, were never the limitation of the Aryan mind, which looked beyond the worldly plane towards the higher dimensions of being and did not deny the world, but simply transcended it, and yet existed within it in a harmonious manner as part of the divine. The problem of God arose with the fall of man, that is with miscegenation from the former heights of consciousness of the semi-divine Hyperboreans during the golden age of Hyperborea before the capture of Saturn in his bands of ice confer. The ringmakers of Saturn, Norman Begrun, to the comparative depth of consciousness that gave rise to the ever-increasing involution via mixture and the decreasing vibrational frequency of the Aeon to the point of the present Kali Yuga and the point of no return, to the modern Uyghur, the debased and negrified white. What heralded the Kali Yuga was the trumpet of Zion blowing itself obnoxiously into the ears of the Aryan society through the agency of the mongolized stock of the Jew. In the Near East, an understanding of reality, of the divine, that is God, was merely a personal affair. Only they could understand God owing to their special properties, ill-defined and nebulous traits possessed only by themselves. Thus they claimed and to this day claim to be the children of God, and this God they speak of is claimed to be the absolute, supreme being, that than which nothing greater can exist. Indeed they attempt, in the characteristically supremacistic and despotic fashion a tendency born of their own defective and mongolized blood which creates a paranoic fear of the unknown and a self-protectiveness that manifests itself in an egocentric self-obsession with safety and security. Protection by a personal father figure deity called Yahweh, to control the world through representing themselves as having a covenant specific to themselves with the sum total, with God. They would take God for themselves even as they are subject to God and the influence that is Him, and proclaim themselves gods in relation to Him/Her as children born of His/Her womb. The Middle Eastern madness then is the imposition of God upon the sum total as mediated by His children is the implied supremacistic claim made by the Jews, as means of attempting to reify via this black magic their rule over the earth, their dominion mandate which they claim in their arrogance to have been bestowed upon them by the Absolute, scribed in their texts and penned in their own name, or the earthly inheritance which was always that of the Aryan. They who were the original race or species form whom all others emanates via mongolization with the anthropoids and possibly even genetic engineering. The Middle Eastern madness of Judaism was thus formed as a stratagem for global conquest and production of all to the status of slaves who are obligated to serve the Jews as will-less puppets in order to subsist in their own countries they themselves have created. The infiltration of Jew into other nations presumably always followed the same formula: infiltrate, assimilate, dominate, exterminate, and the elevation of the Jew in white societies has always brought about the devolution of society and in many cases the complete erasure of the history and identity of the Aryan creators either through miscegenation or through overt slaughter and rapine. It was no different in the Hellenistic period and in Rome specifically during the time the Judeo-Christian regime has assigned to Christ, the Jewish Messiah figure that was presumably invented by themselves as means of softening up the Roman Empire for the takeover. The figure of Philo Judaeus worked with the assistance of Julius Caesar to introduce the Judaistic Hellenism he had contrived, which merged the Jewish-created Stoicism with Platonism and its variants which existed during this time. He introduced the concept of the good versus evil-false dichotomy, portraying spirit as antagonistic to matter and propounding an ethics of contemplative devolution towards the divine, resignation and a life-destroying and denying death cult born of his and his tribe's world-fearers mongolized chandelier who were incapable of any healthy relationship to being, were indeed unhealthy organisms who projected out of the consciousness an unhealthy understanding in reality of misunderstanding of being, of reality at all levels and dimensions. This is what, in conjunction with the Stoicism introduced into Rome and partially Romanized or Arianized led to Neoplatonism through the figure of Plotinus 300 years later, an Alexandrian Egyptian mongrel who welded together the Platonism of Greece with the Near Eastern emanationist philosophy which derived from the mongrel stock of that region. Following from him Porphyry, another Phoenician Jew, moved the goalposts forward and as the Roman Empire at the time was saturated with Christian dogma presumably introduced by Saul of Tarsus it had assisted in crystallizing Rome's collective consciousness just as Christianity had begun to fuse together the disparate stocks which comprised its melting pot of genetic goulash into a distilled product of Near Eastern, Mediterranean and Aryan elements into the contemporary stock which existed at that time. Of course the roots of the disease of Jewish theology extend even further back in time as Bill White details in his book The Tradition of the Mother, back to the original formation of their pantheistic creed such as that of the cults of Cybele and of Dionysos, of Set and Asherah. The origin of Yahweh is written of in White's article Yahweh Unmasked and traces it to a syncretism of the mother goddess figure and Baal, her consort. This makes the template of Jewish theology not, as most would suspect, that of a violent father deity called Yahweh Jehovah, but in actuality a mother goddess, the Ainsir for who is the sum total of being and who has significance in relation to what one may do in relation to her as a Baal or priestly caste intermediary of the divine will, a black magician utilizing the astral light to empower themselves in relation to the sum total, harnessing the magnetism or ether for personal empowerment and the enslavement of others. The laity or foreign races considered by Jews as mere animals and excrement. Thus can be seen that the Jews have hijacked the Supreme Being and have attempted to distort it such that all of that which is the creation of their androgynous father-mother deity, and that all of that which is thus the property of the Jew, the world for their inheritance, by virtue of their relationship to God as the chosen people. The writer concedes his own confusion in relation to the confused syncretism of Dre and related Hellenistic, Neoplatonic and subsequent renditions of the conceptualization of the Absolute, but he affirms that should there be any special relationship between the Absolute and any particular group on Earth, it would be based upon a connection between they who exist harmoniously in relation to the Absolute and the Absolute itself. Clearly those who exist in such a relationship to God are those who are most pure, as they are most harmonious in their elements as a distinct being, all elements of their being having existed and sustained themselves organically over time, and not being a mere jumbled mixture of chaotic elements, which creates a conditio of chaos and thus can never be godly. Insofar Christian identity with its conception of broken systems is correct, that only those which are relatively pure can harmonize with God, that is, can exist in a harmonious manner, which the chaotic behavior of the Jew bears suggests could never apply to themselves. Emanationism itself, it's not necessarily Jewish and presumably has its origin in ancient Aryan Babylon, though it may have its origin at any point on the globe in all Aryan religious formations. In contemporary times there are those who are often associated with the white movement who have affirmed an emanationistic conception of reality and have explicitly declared it not to be pantheistic. Giovanni Gentile, the Italian fascist, in his work The Theory of Mind as Pure Act, formulated the philosophy of actualism, and this is, so far as the writer can understand, echoed in the cosmotheism of William L. Pierce. Both affirm a deity, though Pierce's doctrine is perhaps overly naturalistic and Gentile's presumably a variety of Catholic philosophy under a fascist label, himself having been a Catholic and having been of a comparatively swarthy Mediterranean stock, thus casting a shadow of foreign influence over his work. Nonetheless, it is clear that there exists a divide between a father and mother deity, at least subsequent to the time of Christ, and this is expressed in the Catholic priest Denis Fay's work The Kingdom of Christ and Organized Naturalism. It is clear that Jews and Freemasons are bound up in a thieves' pact of terror intended global government, though it is unclear whether Masonry has not been hijacked and distorted by Jews for their own ends, though the writer suspects it has been. That most of the organized naturalism of Jewish occultism works in tandem with all other forms of occultism that are publicized today, even that of the pro-white movement, which may be controlled opposition, suggests that either the Jews have completely co-opted the original Aryan occultism, or that they have merely created an emanation of their own in the form of controlled opposition. All of the pantheistic subsects of pro-white philosophy, such as David Lane's naturalism and Ben Klassen's creativity movement to the joy of Satan ministries, etc. The tangled skein of the Gordian knot of philosophy and esotericism is difficult to unravel, and the writer awaits answers that he cannot himself provide. Esoteric Hitlerism, Hitler, the Last Avatar, and Manu, the man to come, Miguel Serrano, Chilean diplomat and initiate, brought into the world a doctrine of National Socialist Gnosticism which he called Esoteric Hitlerism, a doctrine which contains the template for an awakening of the Aryan and the immortalization of the soul. His doctrine is that of the left-hand path, the path of the swastika, the return to flirt Hyperborea, the inner condition of eternity which he calls the green ray, the vibrational level beyond physicality, what in Christian esotericism was called the nunc stans or eternal now. The project of Serrano is the liberation of the id Saturn and the earth from the matrix of Tetemurge, and this through the transmutation of the base metal of the now wiggerized white race in its involuted form of dross into the philosophical gold of the absolute personality, The immortalization of the soul through an increase of its vibrational frequency and through a synchronistic gathering of the specific and correct particles of the body and soul, a spiritualization of the material, and this not as an isolated individual but himself as an element of his racial soul. The project is a daunting one, and only the hero can resurrect his soul from the increasing density of the demiurge in the age of Lead or Kali Yuga. He then can call out to Korki Avatara and Watan and his wielders here, his last battalion of Einherja, of warriors, and conquer the enemy on earth as well as in the heavens. The battle lines are clear. On the one hand there are the pure, they who are the descendants of the white gods, who alone are capable of immortality and have one foot in heaven and the other in hell, the hell of this matricized earth plane, the captive Jinnah. And against them on the other side the dark forces of Jehovah and the Demiurge with their galactic and planetary legions. These emissaries of darkness above or below the Earth Serrano does not speak of in much detail, but it is reasonable to infer that they are what have been called the Asuras in the Vedic mythos and Jinn in Islam, the astral parasite demonic forces which have been portrayed in the fiction of J.R.R. Tolkien. As Nazgûlend in Carlos Carcinda as Mud Shadows, also in H.P. Lovecraft. And other horror of the time off in De Siecle. These beings who have been called the hypostases of the Archons in Gnostic literature presumably dwell in or have a connection to the planet Saturn. According to Serrano, Jehovah is a projection of the demiurge or demon, superimposed on Saturn, a supplanting of the a doppelganger, a double, a copy, a palimpsest, an adulteration, a cybernetic monster. The demiurge thus imposes Jehovah Satan on Saturn and extracts energy from this imprisonment to maintain the eternal return. The video and photographic footage of the poles of Saturn reveal that it is indeed a mobile structure on that its poles are vortices of energy that are presumably imposed by the demiurge, by the Big Bang, upon the as means of transforming it into a machine that can absorb the soul energy of those who fail to cultivate the diamond thunderbolt bod of immortal Vajra, the absolute personality through the alchemical process of Vajrayan, tantric Matana. Those who fail at this project will be absorbed into Saturn in the seventh heaven, and their soul energy will be used to power the dark forces and their matrix, further increasing entropy and bringing about the destruction of all. Serrano posits over and against this gradual extinction of the soul and its going to God, to Jehovah the Dark Lord, the Absolute Self, as means of overcoming this fate and the gradual weakening of the soul through the cycles of incarnation. The Christian religion especially he posits as a black magic formula for the capturing of the soul by Jehovah and his earthly emissaries the Jews, which entails a deliberate avoidance of all that which conduces to spiritual development. The formula of Saul of Tarsus and the rabbinate for the subjugation of Rome imposing upon it is the demiurge imposed Jehovah upon Saturn, the Catholic Church. This was done so that the dark forces could absorb the wealth of nations into themselves and encourage the masses to be fruitful and multiply so that they could be exploited for their energy on the earth by the Jews and of their souls vampirized by the demons with whom they work. The remnant of their soul would then be transmitted to Saturn as it flees the earth, ascending to the seventh heaven into the vortex of Jehovah should it not have the power of resistance necessary to reincarnate on the earth or attain the diamond thunderbolt body. Thus the battle lines are drawn between Roma and Ama, the inverse of the spiritual darkness of Christianity, the alchemical transmutation of the personality into the absolute personality of immortal Vajra through Kundalini and Tantra Yoga, the integration of the opposite aspect of one's personality into oneself. The reactivation of the right hemisphere of mind enables the materialization of the astral body, which is the resurrection of the hero. This process is no cowardly resignation or contemplative life of devotion to God, but rather it is the life of spiritual viridity, the upwards path towards the Olympian heights of the immortals. The music of Bach and Mozart, The magic and poetry of the Aryan initiates this in conjunction with the life of bodily and spiritual purity are the path towards immortality and the spiritualization of the world and an overcoming of the dark age of the matrix of Roma, both in its Christian and in its communist forms. The Jews are the foremost adversary of the white gods on the earth and formulate their black magic curse of Christianity as mechanism of mind control to trap the white gods in their matrix prison and to attempt an extinction of the Lit Godi, the light of the gods. According to Serrano, the Jew is a cybernetic machine, a robotic mechanism connected to a battery or power source that he himself helps to feed and that he calls Jehovah. This is done through the absorption of the soul energy of the white gods into themselves through the incantations of the church and the perpetual abuse and imposition of stress upon the white population by the Jews in the form of coerced slavery, coerced prayer, the transmission of their vow energy to the dark forces and the fear and terror, the black magic of the Christian religion which has been imposed upon the white population from its inception. The Jews are inherently diabolical, and only those who have the highest purity of Aryan blood can be saved at best, Serrano contends. Nonetheless, he qualifies, mixing with Jews cannot benefit non-Jews in any way. One way or another, the Jew will never be free from control, direct or remotely by means of telepathic biology by this genetic psychotronics of the rabbis who enslaved their own population and who are themselves controlled by Jehovah as a puppet on electromagnetic strings controlling puppet underlings underneath themselves. Serrano's conclusion regarding the Jews and their tyranny and enslavement of the earth, of Saturn and of the white gods would for many attracted to the material world sound bleak and a future that is no future, but rather inevitable destruction. According to his understanding, it is the idea of esoteric Hitlerism, that of the last avatar of Vishnu Adolf Hitler, he in whom the avatar incarnated and took power to overthrow Roma, the dark forces and the old ideas of the Pisan age that has already defeated the dark forces as Hitler won in the spiritual planes with the idea of Ama, of love that is not expressed through physical organs of sex, and thus we are simply awaiting Ragnarok, the twilight of the gods, with eternal return and, in solidarity with the resurrection of the hero and with